Hello and welcome to an end of year wrap-up show for Starside Chat. I am one of your hosts, Aaron, and with me as always is my other host, Zach. How's it going, Zach?
Good. So I guess this will technically be going up on the 1st or maybe even the 2nd of January. So it's technically the first show of the new year. But yeah, we're wrapping up 2023 this week.
We took a little bit of a Christmas break. I had some family in and some other things going on. But how was your Christmas season?
It was good. I mean, it never lasts long enough. Yeah. I would always like another week off, but you know, never lasts quite long enough. But otherwise, how was yours?
Pretty good. Lots of traveling, less gaming than I would have liked because I was entertaining guests and whatnot. But because we took...
I did get to do some gaming.
Oh, did
and
you?
I'm excited to talk about what I played.
I also...
later on.
I guess I say that I did complete a video game during the time when we haven't been recording, which we'll talk about. But because we took so much time off, there is a lot of news to get through, or a lot of, I guess, big things happened that we haven't talked about.
Yeah, but we should say, like, next week, I think, will be our top 10 lists for 2023. And this week, we're just going to go over sort of, like, the year-in-review stuff that Nintendo and Microsoft and Sony always sends out at sort of the end of the year as sort of a fun little recap of the year. But
before we get to that, though, Zach, E3 is officially dead.
Yeah, this came out probably a couple weeks ago now, but any surprise by this? Because it seemed like it was, they were talking about how they planned to try to bring it back in some sort of big way, but it was always like another year off, another year off. And now it's just like, well, now it's just dead.
Yeah, like I feel like you're right. Like the last 2 or 3 years, they have been like, well, gear up because next year something's going to happen. And then as it got closer and closer, they would say like, no, it's canceled again, or no, it's going to be digital only. Oh no, it's not actually going to be anything. We're not doing digital only. And now they're officially like, we're disbanding. The ESA is like not going to be doing this anymore. So it's a, you know, it's sad, but you know, Keighley has kind of stepped in with his Summer Games Fest, but maybe officially E3 officially dying will add more legitimacy to Games Fest, where people still have all their press conferences, it seems like, around the same time in June, which is nice.
Yeah. Well, I think that was kind of what hastened the death of E3, because last year you had pretty much all the big players like, we're not gonna take part in this.
Yeah.
And they all just kind of did their own thing. And they've all just kind of agreed that around that same time is going to be when their big summer showcase is. And they're just like, well, we don't need, you know, E3 anymore. So we're just going to do our own thing. And so at that point, I don't know what else you do. But yeah, it is a shame that because there's a lot of like good memories of like the big showcases and people coming out on stage and people freaking out at crazy trailers. And you can go back on YouTube and look up like old E3 shows, and they're always like still kind of fun to go back and watch sometimes. I know MinMax at one point did like a live stream where they were just watching old E3 shows and just talking about them. And I was like, well, that was actually pretty fun to go back and revisit, but
it might come. No, I mean, who knows what'll happen in like, you know, 5 years or whatever. But yeah, I think Keighley is the only game in town at this point. So there's not really going to be anyone that has like the power, I feel like, to, what's the word I'm looking for when you like take a king out of, when you like dethrone a king, maybe dethrone is the word I'm looking for. But he's going to be it. So I'm glad we still have that showcase.
Yeah, but I mean, even Summer Games Fest, I feel like last year in particular, maybe if I'm remembering correctly, was like a pretty underwhelming showcase.
It was, unfortunately.
Because I think a lot of them, like Microsoft, PlayStation, and Nintendo, are like, we can just do our own thing and we can save all of our stuff for our own showcase. And so, I mean, Keeley's doing the best he can with what he can get, yeah. But I don't know. I feel like everybody's just kind of going their separate ways, but they're still doing their showcase around the, like, the same week, but I don't know. It's a little bit not the same, but
let's talk about this Insomniac Games hack. A terabyte of data was leaked by, I guess it was ransomed at first. They were, the ransom group put out a message saying, give us, I think, like $2 million or we're going to release all of this stuff. And Insomniac did not give them $2 million. So they put out a lot of stuff, mostly about the upcoming Wolverine game. And so now there's like a playable copy of the Wolverine game out in the world that people have checked out and posted a bunch of footage of. Did you watch any of this footage?
I didn't. It seemed like everybody on Twitter was like agreeing, let's not like get into this. Let's not talk about this. Let's not like engage with all of this leak stuff. And so I just was like, yeah, like I'm good to wait on that. I don't need to see this right now.
I watched a lot of it.
Opposite approaches. What did you, was it good?
It seemed fine. You know, neither of us have really played the Spider-Man game. And, you know, they say they're very good. And so I believe that. And this looked pretty cool. I don't know if I like the voice actor for Wolverine. I don't know what it was. He wasn't, like, gruff enough, I feel like. But it seemed fine.
Not Hugh Jackman enough.
Yeah, not Hugh Jackman enough. But it's interesting. It's... I think it takes place in New Orleans, or at least the part that I was looking at was taking place in like sort of a bayou-esque place, which is interesting. Seems like there's going to be a lot of cameos, which seems cool. I didn't watch a ton of like the combat. Mostly what I watched was like, it's third person, you know, so you're walking around examining things. You have like a detective vision kind of a thing, similar to those Batman Arkham games, but you're, you know, because you're like kind of like a Wolverine, you have like, it's kind of like your extra senses or whatever. It seemed fine, though. It seems very, I saw people online saying like, this is just a reskin of Spider-Man, but I don't think that's the case. I think it's just like a very...
Just without the swinging?
I mean, it just seems like a very competently made third-person game, which is also what Spider-Man is. So, I mean, there's not much you can change in that.
There was, like, years ago when that horrible Wolverine movie came out, there was, like, that tie-in game.
Yeah, I remember that. That,
like, everybody was like, no, this is actually really good. Yeah. Like, the movie sucked, but this game, like, low-key is, like, really, really good. And it was just, like, a God of War clone, but with a, like, a Wolverine skin on it.
This one,
and I'm not talking like 2018 God of War. I mean like old school God of War. And I wonder if this game is just going to do that again, but like more modern God of War style.
Maybe. It's a little bit, the camera is like kind of close to you, similar to how God of War is, as opposed to like being zoomed out. I didn't see any clips of like menus or whatever, or like upgrade systems, but I assume those do exist. The story also seems really crazy. I'm not like a comic books guy, but it seems like there's a lot of interesting stuff going on. But yeah, it's unfortunate that this got leaked, I guess. We had some pretty high profile leaks over the past couple of years, because we had that GTA 6 leak, which also has been, I feel like I've been seeing a lot more of those get reposted after the GTA 6 trailer. I saw some stuff on TikTok that was like someone trying to triangulate a lot of stuff based on, because like there's tons of footage of the GTA 6 leak, and he was trying to like find places in the trailer and like geolocate where that's at from the leak. But yeah, it's weird that we're getting all these giant high profile leaks these last couple of years of video games specifically.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I guess I don't know how you go about doing that, but like, I mean, I guess they thought they were going to make $2 million, yeah. But I don't know. If it becomes clear that they're not going to pay it, I guess you just dump it.
I think that's how it works usually with ransomware these days, because it used to be ransomware, you would infect a victim and then like all their stuff would be locked up and then you would say, pay me and then I'll give you like the unlock code. But now they will still try to lock all your stuff. But before they do that, once they have access, they'll exfiltrate a bunch of data. And then they have two avenues they can get you. They'll say, well, we'll unlock your stuff if you pay us the money. But also, if you don't pay us the money, we're also going to release all this stuff. And so that's another thing that you don't want to happen. But it seems like a lot of people don't want to pay that money, which is, I think, a good thing. I would ransomware groups are bad in general. So I don't know.
Yeah. Like not negotiating with terrorists, exactly, basically, is what it comes down to.
But interesting, and it looks Insomniac did put out a statement where they said they were bummed that this happened, basically, which obviously, but who knows when we'll get the first trailer for that.
I think a lot of developers like rallied around them, were like, this sucks that this happened to somebody, and this is like not good for the industry, and it should not happen.
The game should all support did Insomniac. Seem pretty far along, though, so I wonder if at Games Fest we will get a trailer for it.
Yeah, especially now that it's leaked, like maybe they feel like they can go ahead and just like release some of it officially. But
the other piece of news I wanted to talk about from the last couple weeks is The Last of Us Online mode is officially canceled. They showed us a trailer, not even a trailer. There was like, I think just artwork for it a couple of years ago. And they were like, this is going to be, it's going to continue the story of Last of Us, and it's going to be like online only. But they put out a statement these last couple weeks that was basically like, we had to decide if we wanted to be a live service company or if we wanted to continue with single player games, which was kind of our bread and butter. And because if we put out a live service game, we have to support it for years to come, and that would impact our single player games. And so we've decided to completely cancel the project and just stick with single player games, which frankly is the right call, I think. But I didn't see this coming.
Yeah, there are a lot of game companies that were trying to key into that Destiny like game as service thing. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of like it's taken years for the industry to realize that that is unsustainable in a lot of cases. And that it's very hard not only to make something good in that space, but to support it long term. And yeah, like the conversation around this when the announcement happened was that it's good because they make really good like story driven content. Mm. And to have them like tied up in this years long like game as service model thing would just mean that you wouldn't get more like single player story driven stuff. And so it's good for the industry that we're starting to move away from it. But like, again, like every time I think, oh, they've learned their lesson, they're not going to do another one of these, another one of these like online things gets announced and you're just like, really? But yeah, maybe the tide is turning officially and we can move on from the game as service model.
We can only hope.
What is this cruel thing?
Yeah, I saw this on Twitter, and I started following the developer on Twitter. It's just a little, it's like a weird little, it's not really a boomer shooter. It has the graphics of a boomer shooter, but it's more fast paced, and you have like a chainsaw on your hand and a shot. Obviously calling back to like Army of Darkness and stuff like that. But it's kind of like almost like Hotline Miami.
Like a first person Hotline Miami.
Yeah, kind of. It's like super fast paced and you're just like, you have a shotgun or a revolver. You have a chainsaw also. And you're just sort of like kicking down doors and going through rooms and doing it as fast as possible. And it just seems like really frenetic and cool. And so I wanted to shout this out as something that's on my radar for hopefully 2024 when it comes out. It's called Cruel. I don't know if you can... Oh, yeah, you can wishlist it on Steam, but I don't know that it has a release date. It's an indie retro FPS with roguelike elements developed by dealt with Godot, which is that game engine that is rising to prominence now that people are sort of mad at Unity. It's, I believe, made by one guy, James Dornan. So if you're interested in this, take a look at this trailer. It's I think, a very cool style. It almost reminds me of, like, Blood from back in the day, if you ever played Blood. But, like, super, super fast, like, crazy fast gameplay of just, like, never stop. Like, basically, it seems like he's never standing still, which is cool.
Yeah, I was going to say, I wondered if, because you said Hotline Miami, if it was going to be roguelite, but yeah. Evidently.
It looks cool. So just a little shout out to that game, and then we can get into it. And here's something else I'm going to tease for the end of the show. When we talk about what we've been playing, Zach, you've been playing Hollow Knight, and it seems like you're close to the end, and I'm very excited to talk about that after we talk about our feature.
Yes, I finally did it. Finally started playing Hollow Knight after a couple of starts and stops. I don't know if we want to start with that.
No, we don't. We can do the. We can talk about the year in review. But I just am very excited to talk about it.
All right. So I guess let's start with Nintendo. Did you pull your year in review recap from Nintendo?
I basically compiled everything that I interacted with. So obviously, Tears of the Kingdom is something I interacted with a lot. And the only other thing, really, the only other time I turned my Switch on was, well, okay, two things. So Tears of the Kingdom is the big thing, and we can talk about that. But the other games I played on Switch this year were Mario Wonder, which I did not complete, but I'm like maybe 3/4 of the way through. And then also, my girlfriend and I bought all of the courses for Mario Kart, even though it's come out forever ago.
Oh, yeah.
So we played through all of those that they have released because they're done releasing them. So it's like an extra, I think it's like an extra like 100 tracks or something. Maybe it's not that many, but it's like a ton of tracks. It took us forever to get through. But those are my two, those are my three like big Nintendo things this year that I interact. I know they, you know, Octopath Traveler 2 came out and some other stuff, but I think they had a pretty good year. I mean, Tears of the Kingdom obviously is the most, is the biggest release, that they had.
Yeah. I mean, I found of these like year in review things, I found, Nintendo and PlayStation's to be the most like in depth. Microsoft's was a little bit less in depth and Steam even less than that, but, not super surprised that, I spent the most time on Switch this year. It always gives you like you played a total of this many games for this many hours or whatever, and so apparently I played 40 games on Switch for more than 460 hours, which was the most by quite a lot. And I think a lot of that was Tears of the Kingdom at like 159 hours. But I also played Fire Emblem Engage for over 70 hours.
Yeah, I remember you talking about that.
But so it also gives you like what's the first game you played in this year.
Oh.
And I remember specifically ringing in the new year playing Fortnite with my brother because they have that moment where like the clock strikes 12 and they do like some special thing in game where it's like you can hear like the bells ring in or like fireworks happening or whatever, and it's like new year, and basically they stop you from being able to shoot at each other for like a solid like 5 seconds.
Yeah.
So I remember it being funny. So I did not finish Metroid Prime Remastered.
Oh, I played that too. I forgot that came out this year.
Yeah, and I didn't play Octopath Traveler 2 either. But I did play, I went through like a weird phase this year where I was like struggling to like focus on like story driven stuff or something like Metroid Prime Remastered where I would have to look at a guide. And so I like early on in the year, I just wanted something chill and relaxing. So if you recall, we did some episodes where we got back into Loop Hero, and this was sort of that phase for me. So I played a bunch of Loop Hero on Switch this year. But I also had my first experience with Animal Crossing New Horizons during that time.
Oh.
Because it was just something chill that you could like put on a podcast or a TV yeah. show and just like play something. So I played that for like more than 30 hours, according to my review.
Not to skip ahead to Steam, but Loop Hero was my most played game on Steam.
I think it was also my most played game on Steam as well. I don't, we'll see when we get there. But I also like got back into Vampire Survivors yeah. this year. We talked about that a little over Thanksgiving. And I played a bunch of Legend of Keepers as well. That was a game that I had a little bit of a resurgence with this year, because it was like a little bit like Loop Hero, where you don't have to pay super close attention to it all the time. You just kind of click around. So it was like super easy for that. Yeah. My summer vacation game this year was on Switch, and it was that After Image Metroidvania game. If you recall, yeah. it's like a little inspired by Hollow Knight, but like sort of an anime art style to it. Has like a terrible like cover image that looks like generic like mobile game, but the game itself is actually good. And then my pleasant surprise from Switch this year was that F-Zero 99 game. I thought it was a clever, fun way to sort of bring back F-Zero in a way that I probably wouldn't have played it if it was just like a normal like racing game, you know, like if they did like a futuristic modern, you know, F-Zero racing game, I probably wouldn't have even bothered playing it. But because this was like, I don't know, bringing back the SNES era thing, but making it like a battle royale, somehow that was appealing to me. But also I did play Pikmin 4.
Oh,
but
yeah.
I rolled credits on it, but there's like a whole bunch of stuff that like opens up to do after that. And I did not do any of that. So I thought it was a cool game that I had fun playing. Let's talk PlayStation. So my year in review says I played 27 games for 312 hours.
Whoa.
With my first game being Fist Forged in Shadow Torch, which is another Metroidvania. That's the one where you play an anthropomorphic
yes.
rabbit.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't finish it, but I liked what I played of it. I didn't like it as well as some of the other Metroidvanias I played, but because I found the combat to be not as good, but it was cool to look at, and it was kind of fun to explore. But so my top five games in terms of time spent playing on PlayStation were Final Fantasy 16 at like 88 hours. And then I platinumed Evil West at just under like 30 Whoa. Hours. And then I played like some other stuff. Like I platinumed Dredge at like 20 hours. And then I didn't finish, but I did put in like more than 20 hours in on Like a Dragon Ishin. What about you?
No Sony for me.
Oh, that's right.
I've sort of switched over to just Switch and Xbox right now.
Switched over to the Xbox.
But we can move over to Xbox if you want to do that.
Yeah, let's get into Xbox.
So I tried to play a couple of games. I forget if I told you this, but I downloaded Pentiment because it's on Game Pass, and I still have not. I could not get into it for whatever reason. I don't know why. But I completed Somerville. That was one of the first things I played on Xbox. Starfield, I put in, it says 52 hours on, but I've not completed it yet. I don't think I've picked it up actually since we've talked about stopping playing it, but I do intend to beat it at some point. Apex is significantly more. Apex, I have surprisingly less hours than Starfield. I have like 42 hours. In Apex, I feel like there should be more, but I did. We can talk about this in a little bit. But I played and completed Titanfall 2 over the winter break.
How did you?
Yes, and I really enjoyed it. We can talk about it in a little bit. But that only took me like 5 hours. Crazily, it's a very short game.
Yeah, it's not a super long game. I played it on Steam a few years ago and really liked it as well.
What else is here? Pentiment, all these other things I have like less than an hour in. Like Pentiment, I tried to play Ori and the Will of the Wisps, but I, for some reason I couldn't get into it. I don't know why. I also tried to play that Planet of Lana, and I played that for 3 hours, but for some reason I also just kind of like dropped that. I think I stopped playing that when Starfield came out, and I just never picked it up again. But yeah, my two most played are Starfield and Apex. What about you?
Same for me as far as like my top two goes. I surprisingly enough spent more time on Xbox this year than PlayStation. Still not as much as Nintendo. I spent way more time with Nintendo than either of the other two, but 24 games for a total of 390 hours. With Starfield being the most of that, I put in like 127 hours in on Starfield. I put like more than 60 hours in on Apex, and surprisingly enough, I spent like 60 hours with Wild Hearts as well, which is that EA Monster Hunter clone that's like, I guess, getting like they are stopping support of that game already. But I had some fun with it. And then it wouldn't surprise me. It didn't show up on my list or in the year in review, but it wouldn't surprise me if Battlefield 2042 was just outside that top three, because I had like a fun weekend hanging out with my brother where we were like, for old time's sake, we jumped into Battlefield because we used to play a ton back in like the 360. And so we just like passed the controller back and forth for one weekend and had a really fun time with it. And that got me to like stick with it for like several weeks after that, and had a lot of fun with that game. Also, a pleasant surprise on Game Pass was the re-release of GoldenEye 007, which I didn't play all the way through, but I played a lot of it. And it was fun to just like revisit that game, but have it, unlike the Nintendo version, have it automatically set up to work with the Xbox controller, so you didn't have to do any finagling of like the controls to make it feel right. I do have some disappointments on Xbox, though. The Last Case of Benedict Fox, that Metroidvania, I was hoping that would be a really like top tier game for me this year, and I did not like that game. It was not that good. And then Redfall was also a disappointment. Yeah. And I did play some Atomic Heart on Xbox, and I was also not wowed by that game, you know, sadly.
Speaking of like servers being turned off and stuff, we didn't talk about this in our news section, but did you follow any of that like the day after, or was it called like the day before? That Steam game that was like heavily hyped and was like the most wishlisted game on Steam. And then it like released and it was like super buggy and awful. And then the company disbanded and said that we're no longer a games company and all of our servers are turning off in January.
No, I did not follow
this. A weird thing that happened, but just shout that out, I guess. I forget what it's called, like the last day or the day after or something like that. There's a bunch of really funny YouTube videos of YouTubers checking it out because it's like a very hyped up game and it's just like crazy buggy and it's very funny.
Well, let's talk about Steam. Did you pull this review as well?
Not, I didn't really engage with Steam. I like that they give you that little one, two, three, that little octagon of games you played where it has like your most played games and then it has like the little chart inside of it, you know? So my chart is like Battle Royale, Metroidvania, Souls-like, deck building, bullet hell, platformer. And my like interior little shape is mostly Metroidvania. I don't know what my platformer is. Oh, it's because I played Grime for a couple of hours.
Well, Grime is a Metroidvania. That's true. There's like crossover definitely between Metroidvania.
So, like I said, Loop Hero is my most played, and then second most played is Grime, and then third most played is I played a couple sessions of Apex this year in on PC just to see how I would like it. And it was fine, but I think I am gonna stick with Xbox. 13 achievements. I didn't engage much with Steam this year. I was mostly a console gamer this year, I have to say.
I was going to say, it was the same for me. Like, I definitely spent less time playing games on PC this year than I have in years past. But my most played game, I think, was probably technically Legend of Keepers, because I think I ported my Loop Hero save over to Switch, because you can do that. Otherwise, it probably would have been Loop Hero. I also put in a good amount of time into that Necrom expansion for ESO.
Oh, yeah.
And I played more Vampire Survivors. I played a little bit of Diablo 4. I keep meaning to go back and spend more time with that, but I have not. And then another one from this year, Dead Cells Return to Castlevania. I remember playing a bunch of that when it first dropped.
Did you see they released a trailer for the Dead Cells animated series?
I did not.
Maybe I should have put that in the show notes. Oh, yeah, it was a couple days ago.
And then the other thing I tried out very briefly because it was on sale was that Halls of Torment game, which is like it's supposed to look like an old school like top down Diablo game, but it's in the style of Vampire Survivors.
Oh.
But you like move around and you click the button to, you know, do your attack or whatever, but you can go into the settings and set it to like auto attack or whatever. So it basically is just Vampire Survivors where you just move around. And yeah, I thought that was fun and interesting. I prefer Vampire Survivors, but maybe it's because I've spent more time with it. But
yeah.
But yeah, that's our,
who would you give the year to? Probably
would
Nintendo.
I give it to? Yeah, I was going to say, maybe just because I spent the most time with the Switch, I would probably give it to Nintendo. It's worth noting that, like, I mean, Tears of the Kingdom was a massive launch for them.
Yeah.
That did super, super well. But also, they released, like, the Mario Brothers movie that was also a massive success. And then they also opened a theme park in California.
And they announced the first expansion to their Japanese theme park. They're making a Donkey Kong world.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, it'll be right next to it.
But like, they also brought all the Pikmin games to Switch and released a new one. And they released a new like Fire Emblem. And they released remasters for Metroid Prime and Super Mario RPG. And like, Super Mario Brothers Wonder is like widely considered probably the best 2D Mario since the SNES era. So, yeah. I mean, pretty big. Like, I don't know that anybody's like giving Nintendo an award for this, but they kind of had a huge year this year for all the stuff they released. So I guess if I was giving out a who won the year, it would probably be Nintendo.
I think I would have to agree. I like I said, I didn't really engage with Sony this year. Xbox has mostly been, I've been playing stuff that's been out, like not new releases. But the only thing where I've had, like, the only thing I've pre-ordered this year is the Tears of the Kingdom, like, special edition or whatever. So, I mean, I feel like I would give it to Nintendo as well. They've had a sneakily, like, very good year. For whatever reason, it doesn't seem like, I think this is a symptom of, like, E3 not really being a thing because you don't get to pack all the announcements into one show. Now it's kind of like drip feed throughout the year and you forget about stuff like, oh, this happened in January. Or like, when did Tears of the Kingdom came out? In like March? Or when did it come out? Like April? May?
It was like, yeah, April or May or something like that.
Feels like forever ago. But yeah, I think Nintendo's had the strong. And also, I think Nintendo's going to have a great 2024 because supposedly that's when the Switch 2 is coming out.
Yeah, I mean, it could very well come out next year, and I wonder what their lineup will be, because a lot of people were thinking, okay, well, they're sort of getting out just like some of these little remasters and like some smaller games like Super Mario Brothers Wonder, because they don't want to like announce like a huge new game because it's going to be a launch title for the next Switch. So that could be true. We don't know for sure. But also, like, I think, like, Sony had, you know, a Final Fantasy game but and a Spider-Man game, but they also, they did release PSVR 2, but I don't think that's been, like, a huge success in
any
way. And they also had, like, Forspoken, which was kind of a big stumble for them.
Mm.
And then they had, like, Xbox had Starfield and Hi-Fi Rush, but, like, other than that, they didn't have any huge game releases. And, like, Starfield was really sort of hit or miss for people.
Yeah.
And people love Hi-Fi Rush, but I'm gonna... Maybe this is fighting words, but I think it's the most overrated game of the year, to be honest.
Whoa! Your first... The overrated game of the year award goes to...
Goes to Hi-Fi Rush... Like, it does, you know, that we talked about the trailer that has that, like, cringy cliche thing of, like, freeze framing on the main character. And it's like, you see that guy? That's me. I bet you're wondering how I got here. And it's like that tone throughout the entire game. And, like, sure, it has a nice, like, Saturday morning cartoons aesthetic. But if you get down to it, it's just like a level based, like, combo driven action game. And the thing that sets itself apart is a rhythm game thing layered on top of that. And I don't like rhythm games. So it did nothing for me. And also, like, it gets to a point where it, like, the action will come to a complete stop until you, like, perfectly time a, like, counter or a parry. And once it got to that, I was like, yeah, I'm done with this. Like, I don't need any more of this. Like, the world, the universe, the characters weren't doing anything for me. So it's just like, I think I'm done with this. But people, like, are still talking about it like, oh, that should have been nominated for Game of the Year. And I'm like, no. I think what it was is it came out so early in the year when there wasn't a lot else to play. And it was like a shadow drop for Game Pass. So people, I feel like if it wasn't for that, people probably wouldn't still be talking about it, but maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
Zach, I want to talk about Hollow Knight.
Okay, let's talk Hollow Knight.
What made you pick it up again, and what system are you playing it on?
I am playing it on PlayStation, although I completely forgot, we bought the game on Switch last year, early on in the year, because we realized they had a physical copy that came with a map that you could fold out. But I started playing it on PlayStation, and so I just kept playing it there. But yeah, I played it initially when it first came out in like 2017, just based solely on word of mouth. But at the time, I was not really, like, I didn't know anything about Metroidvanias. Like, I'd never really played one. So I didn't really know what I was getting into, and I just got, like, super lost and confused early on, and I just kind of dropped it and moved on to other games. And then I tried to get back into it this last holiday break, but I ran into that problem on PC where, like, enemies will just, like, be invisible or whatever, and I didn't know how to fix it. So I just, like, instead I played Death's Gambit Afterlife, which is a great game. But, like, obviously now I've played, like Metroid Dread kind of opened the door for, I think, both of us to the Metroidvania genre. And Hollow Knight was kind of the one, like, big game that I hadn't, like, played yet. And you had always talked about how much you liked it. So I was like, well, I might as well, like, there's nothing else out right now that I'm, like, super jones into play. So I was like, I might as well play Hollow Knight, especially since it seems like over the holidays, I always, like, play a new Metroidvania of some sort. At least for the last few years, that's been my thing. And so I decided this was going to be the year. This was going to be the year for Hollow Knight. And also, it works out because supposedly Silksong might come out next year.
I think so. I know I've been saying that for 2 years, but...
Yeah, we have been. I got off to kind of a rough start because I was not paying attention to any walkthroughs or guides or anything like that. I was just kind of exploring randomly and just kind of taking it in as I went around. And I did that thing. I didn't even know it was possible, but other people also had, like, Googled this, because I guess this is a thing that can happen where you can go get the wall climb in, like, the fungal waste area. Mm-hmm. And without realizing it, completely bypass the Mantis Lords and just, like, accidentally drop down into the Deep Nest, which is a horrible place to be, especially if you're not ready to be there.
True.
And so, like, I had not upgraded my nail at all, and I didn't have double jump, and I didn't have all that much health or very many
soul jars charms. Or whatever.
soul jars or charms to work with. So I was just like exploring. I felt like I was stuck in the deepness for just like a couple hours, just aimlessly wandering, trying to figure out how to get back out again. But I eventually figured out you can take the tram to the right and you can climb up through the City of Tears. Or is it the city? No, it's the King's Crossing or something like that. Anyway, it's like a late game area that you're not supposed to be in yet. But there is like, that's the first area that you can get to that has a bench and a like fast travel point. So I finally got out of there, but it ended up being good because on the way out, I found like a pale ore so I could upgrade Nail, not just once, but twice.
Nice.
And also by activating the tram, that helped me out later on as well, because as you're going through, I think it's Crystal Peak, you like can get into this other area by accident. You kind of drop down in it. I think that's where you like activate the Dream Nail.
Yeah.
But like I didn't want to be there yet. I was still trying to explore Crystal Peak and get the Crystal Heart ability. And so if I didn't have the tram, I wouldn't have been able to get back and like circle back around to it. So I would have been stuck wherever I was at the time. So fortunately, that little diversion ended up helping out. So like people are always like, because I started doing what you suggested, where you're like, after you beat a boss or like find an ability, you just Google, okay, where to go after such and such. And everybody is always like, well, the beauty of Hollow Knight is there's not like a right or wrong answer to where to go next. You just kind of do whatever. Because you can go basically anywhere. And I think a little bit that's not true. Like there is like a best practice route to take so that you don't have to like do it as much backtracking. But to a certain extent, that is true, because you can end up accidentally going through Deep Nest and still find some good stuff. But I don't know how much more I have left. I did open all the stag stations and I fully upgraded Nail, but I know there's like at least one area I haven't even been to yet.
Did you kill the Nailsmith?
I did not.
I didn't either.
Yeah, so I in looking up like guides for some things, that was one of the ones I saw that was like, don't kill the Nailsmith, because you can go find him later somewhere else.
Yeah, he's hanging out with somebody. So are you going to do the Path of Pain?
I'm not sure where that is, but maybe. Did you do it?
I did, but I did it kind of like a cheating way. There's a pin you can get from the like bees, the bee area, that kind of slowly refills your health.
Oh, yeah.
And so it allows you to just like chill out for a second during that and kind of like get your way through there. It's definitely not necessary to do, for sure. But I think to get the fullest ending, you do need to go to the like White Palace or whatever, or the Pale King's Palace, and do like the regular thing, not necessarily the Path of Pain, but like just the other stuff in that zone. And then you can go fight the Hollow Knight. But how are you liking it overall?
I'm liking it. The combat's fairly simplistic, but also it's like really refined because it's so simplistic, and it just like feels really good to play. I couldn't tell you how many bosses I've taken out, but I'm curious.
Do you have the double jump now?
I do have double jump.
Cool.
I think I might have all the abilities.
Every ability has an upgrade to it.
Yeah, I think I might have all the abilities. I'm not sure. I know there's like I forget what they're called. It's like Abyss Shriek or something like that. I got that upgrade, and I got the Ground Pound upgrade and the whatever the basic spell ability is. I got that upgrade.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't know if there are other ones to get.
Do you have the dash? The dash is basically the first thing you get. Do you have the void dash where you like kind of void out and dash?
Yes, and I have the charm that makes it so that when you dash through an enemy, it deals basically nail damage.
That's great, yeah.
I've found that super useful, especially for those like big guys that have shields and take like a million hits to kill.
Those are awful.
I don't even fight them now. I just dash through them.
What about the grubs? Have you completely gotten all the grubs?
I probably still have a few grubs to find, but I've found enough of them that I was able to get like the pale ore. I don't know if that is a reference for people for how many it takes to get to that one. But
you eventually get to the point, I forget where you get this, but there's a pin that will show you where they are on the map, like all the ones that you have remaining.
Oh, really?
And that helps to collect them all. And then I think when you catch them all, you can, or no, maybe, so there's that love door. Have you seen that love door?
Yeah, I think so.
If you go into there, I believe that's where the person who is collecting all the grubs is. And I think after you kill that person, you might get the grub pin, which will help you to complete, like, find where the rest of them are.
Mm.
But
yeah, maybe I should look up that like a guide for how to do that stuff and go tackle that next.
Are you going to check out that DLC at all? There's two DLCs, one of which I did not engage with at all, called Godmaster. That's like you find it, I think, down in the sewers. And then there's another one that is the Grim Troop, where it's like a circus.
Yeah, so without knowing anything about it, I inadvertently activated that one.
Oh, nice.
I stumbled upon it and just without knowing anything about it or that it even existed, I like somehow activated it and I was like, oh. So that's a thing that is going on in my game. I know you're supposed to like use the little charm that what's her face gives you and mm-hmm. then go take down some like Grimkin or whatever to fully activate it. But I don't know like what the story implications are there.
Yeah, I did not really engage with that.
I also know that the vendor that pops up in Dirtmouth can, like, if you pay for it, they can make the breakable charms unbreakable.
Yes.
So I've considered maybe just, like, trying to grind for the geo to be able to get those. But
you need to do that if you want to get all pins. Or no, what happened? It happened to me that like, I wanted to get all pins, but I had given one of them to that person, and she keeps it until you give her enough geo. And so I basically, like, couldn't have all pins until I grinded for, like, you know, 25,000 geo or whatever it is. That brings up a good point, is what charms are you mostly using?
Well, so there's that. That's one of the cool things about the game is there's, like, you can have your exploration charms mm-hmm. and then you can have your like boss combat charms.
Yeah.
So for, I guess one of the things I don't like about it is the fact that like you have to go buy the map, but that's not enough because you also have to buy a quill and then sit at a bench to update the map. But then you also have to have this one charm taking up a charm slot so that you actually know where you are on the map. It's crazy to me that you just like get an ability to where you can go into acid, like there are pools of acid and they eventually just give you the ability to be in acid without taking damage, but you still have to have a charm active to know where you're at on the map. That seems backwards to me, but hopefully that won't be the case in Silksong, but
it's a good question. I don't know how they're going to handle that. I don't think that, what's the map guy's name?
Cornifer.
Yeah, I don't think Cornifer is going to be in Silksong, which is a bummer because it was such a thrill always when you're in a new area and you're kind of freaked out, you don't know where you're at, and you start to hear his humming. You're like, oh man, this is good. So I'm bummed that he probably won't be in this game, but I don't know how they're going to handle map stuff. I don't know if there's going to be a cartographer like that, but or if they're going to handle it a totally different way. So it's a question.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Because that was the case in Ori and the Will of the Wisp, right? Wasn't there also like a map person that you could find?
Yeah, there was also some map person that you would go get a map from. I know, like, Grime did it a little bit differently, where you would just have to explore until you found this, like, map shard, basically. Mm-hmm. And once you activated it, it just, like, you just had the map and everything was, like, visible. And you didn't have to have any sort of special thing equipped to know where you were at. But,
yeah.
Yeah, it seems like a lot of Metroidvanias do that, where when you enter a new area, you can't see where you're at until you activate some sort of map. But they sort of handle it a little bit differently.
I think Hollow Knight was the first one to do that.
It might have been. I saw that Mossbag guy had put out a video sort of comparing Hollow Knight and Ori and the Will of the Wisps, and just kind of talking about, like, which one borrowed what from which game, and talking about how a lot of people consider Ori and the Will of the Wisps to have ripped off a lot of, like, ideas from Hollow Knight. I don't know how much of that is true or not, but also at some point it's like, are we... I don't know why we're just looking at one genre and being like, oh, this one ripped off that one. It's like, well, they're pretty much genre tropes at this point. So I don't know if you can really say that about it or not. But
I love that guy's videos. And I would recommend, once you beat the game, checking out his, like, full history, like, lore video of Hollow Knight, because it's very detailed and it will give you sort of like a background of, like, what actually is going on. It taught me a lot about the lore.
I was going to say, for sure, I will need some sort of lore video to understand basically anything that has happened.
Every Silksong trailer that they've released, he's done, like, really great breakdowns. Kind of like those, you know how whenever like a Zelda trailer came out, that, like, Game Explain would put out, like, a 50-minute video dissecting everything?
Mm-hmm.
He has similar ones to the Silksong ones, and he has, like, some really interesting insights into what the game could be. But... So have you, I believe you're close to the point where you need to go to the white, I forget what it's called. I think it's called, like, the Pale King's Palace. Have you, like, dream nailed that sleeping guard in the ancient basin to get to, like, that ancient palace place?
No, I have not done that.
I think you should do that before you try to complete the game, because I think you need to do that to get the true ending.
Well, so there are, like, 5 or 6 different endings, so I don't know which one is the true ending. Also, one of that Mossbag guy's videos said something about how, what's the, Team Cherry is gonna try to, like, honor all the endings with the next game.
Interesting.
Which I don't know how they do that, but...
Yeah.
Supposedly... There's not, like, one ending that's considered canon. So technically any of them are fair game for the next game. I don't know how that will work, if it's going to do, like, a Mass Effect thing where it reads your save file.
That would be interesting.
What the plan is, but yeah, I know you're supposed to get the, like, Void Heart charm or something like that.
Yeah.
For, like, the better versions of the endings, but there are still, like, 2 endings that seem not good.
Yeah.
And it, like, one of them, like, also traps the Hornet character.
Yeah.
And I don't, like, how would that work if they're gonna honor that ending?
It's a good question.
For the next game. So I don't know how any of that works, but anyway, it's very cool. It's very interesting. I'm liking it a lot. I am wondering if I'm running out of steam with it, though, and maybe I do need to just, like, progress towards the end. But maybe I will unlock that other area that I haven't been to, and it'll give me, like, a resurgence of energy playing the game. But
I'm sure we'll talk more about it when you complete it. I want to talk about the ending of it with you, and also, like, if you watch those lore videos, I want to discuss that on the pod.
Okay, yeah, maybe we'll do, like, a special Hollow Knight episode here in the next few weeks. But I want to hear about Cookie Cutter.
It's been on my radar since it came out, or they released that trailer, I think, last Summer Games Fest. And it's cool. It's got a very art, like, drawn style, like, hand-drawn style. It is also, I think, inspired, you know, it's a Metroidvania, so it's inspired by Hollow Knight in some ways. But it's similar to Hollow Knight. You have, like, a regular attack that will fill up your, basically, soul meter. And then you can use that to heal, or you can use it for special abilities. I like it a lot. I have not beaten it yet, but I'm very charmed by it, like the comedy in it and just like this characters and whatnot. And the combat is okay. The parrying system, I think, could be better. I was hoping to unlock like a thing that would make the parry timing a little less or a little more forgiving. Because right now, I got a little bit good at it, but some of the enemies, I just like cannot get the timing right for the parry. But thankfully, they give you the option to just dash through enemies if you want to, and so you don't have to engage with the parrying if you don't if you don't want to. But I think I've killed 2 bosses so far. I like the weapons a whole lot. You start out with just your fists, and then you get, there's a chainsaw you can get. The one I really want is a big motorcycle that you drive around. I'm very excited to unlock that. I just got to the point where I encountered an NPC who was like, hey, you should like check out a motorcycle. Here's all where the parts are. And so I have to go around the map and collect the different parts of the motorcycle, and then he's going to like build it in. But there are some things I don't like about it, like because of the art style being so 2D, sometimes it gets a little confusing. If you're in an area and there's like a bunch of the same type of enemy, they will kind of stack up on top of each other, and so you don't really realize that there's actually 2 enemies where one enemy seems to be, and one of them will like, you know, rear back to do a thing that you can parry, and the other one is just standing still. And so that can cause some trouble. I've definitely run into some rooms where, because they have these rooms where you walk in and then both sides shut and you have to kill a bunch of waves of enemies, and then it will unlock. And some of those rooms have been difficult for me until I like learn them, basically, because you kind of get jumbled up in a mess. But now that I've unlocked a couple of different abilities where I basically can just do a bunch of AoE damage on the whole screen, which helps out a whole lot. But enemy design is really cool. All of the areas are very distinct from each other. It feels like a very living world. So far, it's been really, really fun, and I'm excited to play more. I think I would recommend it. I don't know if it's still on sale, but I got it for like $17 or something. I would bet it will eventually come to Game Pass, but I'm excited to play more of it and beat it and to get that motorcycle. But yeah, a hard recommend from me.
I feel like at some point we should do an episode all about Metroidvanias.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Talking about our favorite ones and maybe ranking some of them.
This might be in my top. I think it probably would be in my top 10 Metroidvanias that I've played. Maybe top 5.
I need to. We should put that list together sometime.
That's a good idea.
Maybe that's an episode coming up here in the new year.
The other thing I checked out was Titanfall 2, because I thought it was on Game Pass, but it's not. But it was also like, I think it was $3 or something. It's always crazily discounted.
Yeah.
But I bought it on Xbox and loaded it up. It is surprisingly short, but I loved it. I had already watched a full playthrough of it, but I haven't actually played it. And after playing Apex, it's kind of insane to play, because it's like playing a movie version of Apex. Like everything is like, the production value is really high, and every gun you pick up is a gun from Apex, which I should have expected, but it was crazy. Like the first gun I picked up was a Flatline. I was like, man, this is a Flatline, but it looks like a Hollywood version of a Flatline, because everything is like super high res and stuff.
Yeah, realistic instead of like, I don't know, somewhat cartoony.
But it was great. I eventually found a Hemlock, and I was like, man, this is exactly like playing Apex, kind of, except I can run on walls and stuff. And it was great.
People want that added to Apex, for sure.
It would be cool. I think they should add Titans to Apex, frankly, because every time I got in my Titan, I thought it was a very fun experience. The person who's in Apex, who's the Simulacrum with like the white face? She has the sword in Apex. Ash. She's a boss that you fight in Titanfall 2, and hers was the boss fight I had the most trouble with for some reason. I think I was just using the wrong Titan type, but that was the only stumbling block where I really died at all. And then, yeah, I was done in like 4 hours, 4 or 5 hours, but It was great. A nice little game. And it's always heavily discounted. So if you're looking for just a nice little thing to play one evening, basically, it took me, I think, 3 days to play because I played it in chunks. But if you're looking for something super short you can get done in a weekend, check out Titanfall 2.
Yeah, I remember playing it on PC like several years ago now and had a really good time with it because I had always heard like people recommending like usually these multiplayer games will have like some sort of like campaign mode, but it's like usually an afterthought and nobody remembers it like 5 seconds after they're done with it. But like not so with Titanfall 2. Everybody's like, no, this is like one that you should check out for sure if you like first person shooters. And yeah, I think it is like a really good, really memorable campaign to play through. And at $3, if you can find it that cheap,
yeah,
like why not?
What's the Shangri-La Frontier?
So this is an anime that I was hanging out with.
Is this the bird one? The guy with the bird head?
Yeah. So we started watching this, and I'm only like a couple episodes in, but basically, it's about a character who plays like, it's almost like, you know how they're like those sci-fi original movies and it's like a whole thing where people like bad movies because it's fun to watch them because they're so stupid and bad and people get some sort of enjoyment out of that. This is like the video game version of that where in this anime world, people love playing bad video games. But the main character it goes to this like video game rental place and like all games are in VR basically, and he's accustomed to playing really bad video games, but this one came out and is supposedly really good, so he's like gonna take a break from bad games to try this out. And it's basically like a VR MMO more or less, and he jumps in and he does like sort of the almost Monster Factory style thing where he makes a really goofy looking character that has like a bird for a head and he's like doesn't have a shirt on. And but he's like, since he's used to playing really terrible games, he's actually really good at normal games that are not bad. And so he's in this like VR world, but it's like very like in the know in terms of like gamer culture. They have funny moments where like he first boots up the game and it's like, here's the intro. And he's like, skip. And like, yep, that's how everybody does it. They just skip that. And then, but it also has these like moments where it's very like, if you've ever played an MMO or if you've ever played like an RPG of any sort, you will like recognize some of the things they kind of play around with and have fun with.
Mm.
And I have enjoyed like the very few number of episodes that I've seen so far, but I want to watch more of it.
I will check this out. I think it's been on my list as something because one of the people I work with is very into anime, and he was like, yeah, I'm checking this out, it's pretty good. And so it's something that I have wanted to take a look at, but I just haven't had time. Maybe I will, because I'm gonna have a bunch of free time in the next 2 weeks.
I have only seen like maybe 2 or 3 episodes so far, but I would recommend it based on the small sample size. But.
And then both of us have kind of still been playing Apex, but we've dropped off because we've had other things going on.
Yeah, I played a little bit before Christmas, and then I went to spend time with family and haven't really dipped my toes back in since then, especially since I've been playing Hollow Knight instead. But that's something I will probably get back to here in the new year, because I do want to try to make a little bit more progress on the Battle Pass.
Yeah, me as well. We'll probably play together, I would imagine.
Yeah, I'm sure we will. We can set that up.
But I think that's it for us.
Any parting wisdom for this week?
I'm going to dust off an old parting wisdom I used to have a little bit ago. And it is to play Hollow Knight.
Yeah, I should go back to our old episodes where you were talking about Hollow Knight during your first time playing through it. See if I can get any wisdom from your playthrough.
Maybe we will do like a special Hollow Knight or like a special Metroidvania episode in the new year when there's like a lull when nothing's coming out. Because I think that would be fun.
Yeah, it would be, especially once I finish it and have it sort of fresh in my mind to go over all of that stuff. But On that note, go ahead and follow us on YouTube, Instagram, and Twitter at Starside Cafe, and we'll catch you on the next one.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.